Hello and welcome to the After Dinner Podcast. My name is Jay Swords. This is the podcast extension for ROI Show 558. Our guest today is Matthew Christopher, author and photographer, and we're going to be talking about the life and death of the American Mall. Our history buff today is Ed Broders. Ed, start us off.
Thanks, Jay. At Mall of America opened to great fanfare, I think somewhere in the 90s, which would be kind of past the peak of mall building by your timeline, but it became a destination in and of itself. Has it been able to hold on to that?
Well, that is something that I would say remains to be seen. I was just reading about that when I wrote the article, and it appears that they've narrowly avoided foreclosure with a forbearance agreement. And, you know, I don't know all the details of that, but essentially, you know, sounds like a bit of a narrow miss on that part. And certainly the idea of opening these huge malls right now, let alone 20 years ago, you know, it's something that is a huge gamble, even though they're still doing it.
Sure. I'd like to talk a little bit about the artistic end of what you've been doing here. Your photographs are amazing and very sort of haunting. Can you talk a little bit about what is it about abandoned spaces, particularly malls, but you do other things as well, that really draws your creative interest and spurs you to kind of want to document these places?
Well, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate the kind words about my work. And I would say the thing that draws me to abandoned places, I mean, you know, a sort of brief overview of me getting into this was that I worked in the mental health field, and I was really interested in all of the state hospitals and institutions that were being torn down left and right, and very passionate about the fact that I felt like people who didn't have much of a voice were essentially being erased from the history books. And as that obsession kind of grabbed me, then it was like schools and factories and power plants and churches and homes and, you know, all of the sort of tapestry of abandoned places across the U.S. And I realized as I did that we are actually really poor, I would say, at coming up with documenting places, with sort of examining their significance and writing individual histories of them, and certainly a photographic documentation. I mean, it happens, but it's very spotty. It's not something that if you're a developer and you're planning on tearing down a mall, or a demolition company, is necessarily going to occur to you, hey, maybe this is something we should do, because in 20 or 30 years, maybe even 10, people are going to want to look back at that and remember what we had. So if I had to sum it up in a nutshell, I think that's kind of what moves me about it, is not so much just for our present moment, but also for people to come who may want to have a bit more of a sort of cultural and historical understanding of what things were actually like now.
Okay. Ed, do you have another question?
When this industry was booming in the 70s and the 80s, was there a lot of, I guess I'd call it kind of speculative investing by companies where, well, it's the value of this thing's going up 10% a year, and 5 years later we sell it for tax reasons, but just for that short-term money?
Right, absolutely. I mean, I would assume that that is exactly what people were thinking of, is sort of the sky is the limit. There's no amount of malls that's too many malls. And if you build a new mall in an area that already has two malls, and then those malls are seen as the old malls or the scary malls or, you know, the less fashionable malls, then yes, you will certainly take over the lion's share of the market and make a lot of money on it. But what I don't think people were anticipating was the obsolescence of the entire kind of package when you had big box stores come along. I would say that to me is really the first point where you can point to the fact that things really are not going to go well for malls at that juncture.
Matthew, I'm thinking about the malls again that we have here in the Quad Cities. When those malls were originally put in, they were truly spaces meant to mimic civic areas. They had fountains and little rivers and waterfalls running through, and they had trees, you know, arboretums inside of them, and there was, you know, an attempt to sort of make scapes in the, you know, stained glass windows or things on the top or whatever. And one of the things that happened first, at least here, when the mall scene started to change, was that all of that sort of attempt to beautify and make this a really pleasant space to be, those were the first things that went as cost-cutting measures. We, you know, you took out the fountains and you, you know, tiled over the areas. And I'm just thinking from your work as an artist, how do those two different kinds of malls, do you even find those original sort of much more artistically styled malls anymore in abandoned places, or are you really getting sort of that stripped down version that you're having to work with?
It's a bit of both. I mean, I've been to places just after they closed and they're very much intact. And I would say the kind of opposite end of the spectrum was, say, the Owings Mills Mall in Maryland. That was a really high-end mall. It had all of the things you're talking about, and that was mid-demo at that point. So a lot of the kind of nice features had been removed, but you still get glimpses of the opulence that, you know, they were at least trying to mimic. And I mean, I think that's something that you absolutely see in places. It kind of reminds me a little bit of one that a mall that I just went to that is still open, but they're demolishing parts of it, and I think they're going to turn it into an outdoor shopping area. And there's this woman that was asking me why I would want to take pictures of it because it was so crappy now because everything was closed in it. And, you know, she kind of repeated that a bunch of times. And I said to her, well, you know, it's, I mean, if you look at those skylights, those fountains, the little doodle patterns on the carpets, I mean, all of those things are going to be gone soon, and they will never build them that exact way again. I mean, it's never going to be something that you're going to see. And she thought about that for a minute, and she's like, well, now I'm sad that it's getting torn down. And it's like, oh, mine's absolutely done.
Right.
That's what I do. But it is a point where I think that, you know, you have to sort of think about that, that there was a very specific aesthetic and way that they were built. And, you know, even if we decide 20 years from now that malls are what we want to do again, they're not going to be built the same way or look the same way.
Right. Ed.
How are these places financed? Was it all private corporate equity, and assuming there's lenders involved, who wound up holding the sack on all these things?
Well, to be honest with you, that is an area that I can speculate about, and I would speculate that you are absolutely correct, that is the sort of, you know, the people that were founding these. As far as who wound up holding the bag, that's a really good question. I don't know. And I mean, there's often a lot of sort of squabbles over the property, even because, like, say, for example, you own a massive mall, but all your anchor stores own their stores, and they're not that property that they're on, and they're not going to sell it until they figure out what's happening with the property after that. So you're basically looking at something where there's a lot of variables to dump a place that is essentially a money hole. And that's exactly the question, is who winds up holding the bag for that. And if I were somebody with maybe more of an expertise in forensic finances, it'd be an interesting wormhole to go down.
Has the ownership of these places, as they've declined, are we seeing fewer and fewer players owning more and more properties like we have in every other business?
It seems like that. I mean, there's one company in particular that I've unsuccessfully approached to get access to a trove of malls that they have, including a number that are abandoned. And it's like, if I got in with them. If they said yes, then I could probably stop photographing anything else because I'd be busy for the next 5 years. But I think you still have a lot of sort of smaller players that are going into it and seeing like they can, you know, they can buy this for cheap and then turn the land into something. And then, you know, as always, it's I think a little more difficult than that. But the Harrisburg Mall that I was just mentioning, for example, I don't believe that the company that owns that has this huge cache of malls. But then there are other ones like Moonbeam, for example, that have the Century 3 Mall out by Pittsburgh that seem like they have more holdings, but also are not necessarily maintaining them and are getting in fights with the townships over the buildings and the lack of maintenance.
Sure. Matthew, I'm going to come back, since this will be our last question, come back to the artistic side of things. And I'm going to preface this with a calendar that I really love called Abandoned Places. And I don't know if you know that or not, but essentially there it's somebody who does pictures of European ruins, and he publishes the pictures. I'm going to probably get this wrong artistically, but essentially as negatives. So instead of publishing the picture, he's publishing the negative, which gives it a completely weird, spooky look, even more so. So I'm curious, in terms of your own artistic thoughts as you go into an abandoned place, are you thinking about color photography, black and white photography, playing with the tones and the lighting and so forth and so on? What's the process that you go through as an artist as you're walking through an abandoned place taking photographs?
That's a great question. I would say the way that I approach it is maybe to some people a bit vanilla, you know, but I've been trained as an architectural photographer, and that's what the type of work that I do is. So you really want everything to be in focus. You want to represent the space as accurately as you can to give people a sense of that, which is why I tend towards wider angle shots that are more, I would say, descriptive of the overall area. You want to straighten your vertical lines in the picture so you don't have keystoning, things like that. And I think the, you know, architectural photography is really looking at a documentation of space versus a more of a fine art photography end of things, where you might be doing like a wild angle or turning it in. And I'm not saying this is a knock on that person's work, because I think there are a lot of different ways to approach a subject. And I think that's a thing that's beautiful and should be celebrated. But when I look at my work, it is really there to kind of say, this is what the space is, so that you can get as much information from the building as possible. And, you know, kind of for me to stand off to the side a little bit, not make it as much about how I'm manipulating the image or your view of it, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. I wish we had like another hour to talk, because I find this fascinating, but we are going to have to wrap things up. We want to thank our guest for this 558th show, Matthew Christopher, author and photographer. We've been talking about the life and death of the American Mall. Our history buff for today was Ed Broders. ROI can be found at 9:30 p.m. Friday nights on KALA Radio or on the web at tunein.com. If you're looking for older programs, you'll find them at soundcloud.com. Just put KALA Radio, all one word, in the search, click on the first icon, and scroll down to find over a decade of ROI shows. You can also find ROI on all of your favorite streaming platforms. ROI is recorded at Station KALA, St. Ambrose University.